Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Happy Valley United, the NIL collective that serves all 31 sports and over 850 student-athletes at Penn State. For more info, go to happyvalleyunited.com.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Dustin Schutte for another week of some college football conversation. Are you all ready for that, Dustin?
I am ready to go.
Good deal. We got you early enough in the week before your plans just get packed with things going on. Wedding is on Saturday?
Yep. Yep.
Friday, that's rehearsal Friday. Dinner and plenty of golf for you. This is a big weekend for you.
Yes, we're looking forward to it. And then, you know, starting next week, Jim, I'll be known as Mr. Dustin Schutte, right?
Oh, thank you for giving me the heads up.
Wait, you know what's funny? So this is always the joke, right? But Abby does have her doctorate. So I made the joke, it'll be Doctor and Mr.
So are you going to take her name?
No. we're keeping our own. So, you know, we decided to go that path because it's a mess to try to change it. No, I wasn't going to change mine anyway. So why should she have to change hers?
Oh, come on. Be a real man here, Dustin.
Yeah, let's go.
She's got to take your name. Who's in charge of this relationship? Come on. She's not within hearing distance of this conversation, is she?
Oh, no. I got my earphones. Okay. And you're good. Headphones,
not earphones. Wasn't sure if I could get away with it or not. All right.
You're safe.
Good deal. All right. Let's move on. You know, we're smack in the middle of the off season, so sometimes it's tough getting different topics. But the one thing, Dustin, I love lists, okay? Mm-hmm. I love when people do their rankings of different items. I sent to you a list I wanted to talk to you about. Someone online, and these are a dime a dozen, these type of things, but I thought it'd make a fun conversation. And this guy, he put out his top 20 coaches in college football. Of course, a lot of familiar names in it, but it does bring up, I think, some good conversation. Now, we'll get to the list. We'll give the listeners the list as we go on. But before we get started, I just wanted to hit you up, Dustin. If you were making this kind of list, tell me about how you would do the ranking. What would be your criteria?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember, you know, when I used to do like my Big Ten coach rankings, what I would incorporate into my criteria. Obviously, the win-loss record was a big thing. I always would consider kind of like the resources that were available. So for instance, you know, nobody's going to say that, and I'm just going to go back a few years, nobody would ever say that Pat Fitzgerald, when he was doing his thing at Northwestern, was a better coach than Nick Saban. But one of the things I would factor in and why I would typically have Pat Fitzgerald until the last two or three years when they were not very good at all, one of the reasons I would have him higher than some other people is I always made the argument like Pat Fitzgerald can't do it Alabama what Nick Saban did. But I also don't think Nick Saban could have done at Northwestern what Pat Fitzgerald did. I think that college football in particular, you have to have the right guy in the right job. So obviously the fact that he was able to have so much success until later in his years with the resources, with the academic requirements that, you know, you're not going to have a strong recruiting base at Northwestern, that sort of thing factored in, you know, conference championships, national championships, how often are you making the college football playoff? How often are you in contention? Those are some of the things. The interesting one to me with these lists, and I could never quite be consistent with it, I'll fully admit, is how do you weigh longevity versus recent success? And one of the names, obviously, we'll see on this list and we'll get into it, but like, how do you measure Kurt Cignetti? You know, does he, because he's been incredibly successful, but it's just been the last, I mean, he was very successful at James Madison, don't get me wrong, but obviously just the last 2 years at Indiana, but we also don't have that longevity at Indiana the same way we have for other guys at other places. So that's probably the trickiest one to do, but I think that you know, there's plenty of resources here to kind of go off of. That's how I used to try to do my rankings. It wasn't perfect. Sometimes people would say it was even bad, but that's, I had a method to it at least.
Well, you know, of course, we're going to have to get your that Big Ten football coaches ranking from you this off season and do that show, of course. But you bring up, I think, the great point is, how do you compare things that are so apples and oranges, as you said, Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern versus Nick Saban at Alabama? How about this? How about Nick Saban at Alabama versus Nick Saban at Michigan State?
Yeah, that's another good one, because Nick Saban basically had one really good year at Michigan State and then headed for LSU. He cashed in that paycheck, and that's why I say, you know, college football is so – you have to be the perfect fit at the perfect job, because Nick Saban, I don't think anybody – he'll go down as one of the all-time greats, but you got to have the recruits, right? So obviously when he was at LSU and Alabama, he could recruit. He could get the best players in that program. Was he the best X's and O's coach? I have no idea. I don't know enough about that, but I could tell you that when it was more dependent on player development and getting things done at Michigan State, he basically had the one good year with the Spartans and cashed that into a big-time SEC job.
Do you know, I brought it up just to take a look at it. You hit it exactly. Nick Saban's final year at Michigan State, he was 9-2. He parlayed that into the LSU job. Here were his records for the four prior years that he had at Michigan State. 6-5-1, 6-6, 7-5, which was the highlight year, and 6-6.
500.
Yes. That did not, that's not going to get him on any of these best coaches lists, would it? Did he all of a sudden change and become a better coach once he got to LSU and then Alabama?
I'm going to say no. I think he probably got better as time went on, but I also think that, you know, when you have access to that recruiting, like at Michigan State, you're dealing with, at the time, you're dealing with Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State. So you had three heavy hitters that you were battling and recruiting with. When you're at LSU or you're at Alabama, you are the cream of the crop. So it's easier to recruit to those places and therefore parlay that into six national championships, seven? I don't remember now.
Quite a few.
Enough.
I'm looking that up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I have them down for. And okay. Plenty, obviously, of conference championships. And, well, after his first year at Alabama, which was 2-6, after that, 1 year where he lost three games. One. Every other year, undefeated, one loss or two losses. And that's counting playoff or bowl games. Just a phenomenal record. So you brought up another great point. How do you compare Kurt Cignetti to Nick Saban's job at Alabama? You've got to give credit for Nick Saban for his longevity and his time at the top, which was an extended, I mean, we're talking like a decade and a half of excellence there. Where Kurt Cignetti has had these 2 years at Indiana. Yet I would venture to say the job Kurt Cignetti has done in these last 2 years may be the two best years of coaching in college football history.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong.
I think the only other argument you could make, and I'd have to look at what his first year record was, but I don't think it was that great. The only other person that comes to mind is Gene Chizik, but he was able to, it was a similar situation. I mean, he didn't have obviously the transfer portal, but he did bring in Cam Newton, who was a generational talent. They won the national championship. I believe it was also in his second year. I think his first year they were around a 500 football team. And then after that, it was, you know, they fell off a cliff essentially. I don't think that's going to happen with Kurt Cignetti, but that's the only other, maybe. Well, so the other one, Jim, now that I think about it, at Washington, you might be able to throw Kalen DeBoer into that mix because he had a lot of success in his first 2 years at Washington. Didn't win the national championship, but got into the national championship game. Although if you want to go and retroactively reward them with a national championship because Michigan was full of cheaters, then I'm all for it.
Any opportunity that you have to bring that up, you will.
I do. Yep.
Well, it's an interesting conversation in this way, because you can, have different criteria that is legitimate. And so this, what does longevity mean? What does it do relative coaching Northwestern versus coaching in Alabama? That's always part of it. Now, though, the question I'll ask Dustin is, these last couple of years, NIL has become a factor in all of this. How does that change how we judge these coaches?
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like you're going to be harsher on the guys who were at the big. So like Kalen DeBoer, people are going to say, you have no excuse. Lane Kiffin now at LSU, you've got no excuse. Like, he came out and said, basically, and I know this isn't rankings, but he basically said, well, you know, year one may not be the year we get it done, but, you know, maybe look at year two and year three. That's a perfectly acceptable answer, in my opinion, as much as I don't like Lane Kiffin. I think most coaches would look at that first year and say, you know, we got to get our guys in here. We got to rebuild, blah, blah. When you have access to that kind of money and the transfer portal and guys can follow you from Ole Miss to LSU and you can recruit from the high school and the college levels, people in LSU, if they're like 8-4, I think people are going to be PO'd that you didn't have immediate success. So I think that that's a big thing. I think that also you look at, I think in time, and I don't know about right now, but Indiana's got access to a lot of money. So how does that change the narrative here in the next 10 to 15 years where it's like, oh, actually Indiana's a juggernaut in terms of NIL. They have a lot of money. Does that kind of change their perception of what they can accomplish and what they can do consistently on the football field, right? So we've already seen what they're able to do when they invest in their football program. So does that, I don't want to say it puts them on par with like an Alabama, but do the expectations change? So it's a really interesting question. I feel like there's some schools out there, like I'm just going to mention that, like Illinois is on this list, kind of towards the bottom of these top 20 coaches. I don't think Illinois is ever going to be a team that you look at and say, boy, they got a lot of money. This is unacceptable. I think you're going to, look at 9 wins and say, wow, Brett Bielema did a really good job with that roster and not having great, resources.
Well, when we come back, I want to ask you some more about Indiana, and I'm going to ask you to do something that may be really, really difficult for you, and that's to take your anti-Indiana bias and set it aside. Do you think you could do that?
I'll do my best.
We'll find out when we come back.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. I'm Jim Galante. He's Dustin Schutte. We are talking about a ranking of college football coaches. As I said, we will get to the ranking. We'll get there. But I wanted to ask Dustin about some of these topics and how they're working out, where I mentioned Indiana. I'm calling what Kurt Cignetti did over the last 2 years the single greatest coaching in the history of college football. Okay. I'd like to hear the debate for something else if it's out there, but as far as I know, that's probably the best coaching ever. Now, you brought up the point of Indiana probably has more money than people realize. Okay. Mm-hmm. But you know what? So does Texas Tech. So does Texas A&M. You know, right. So does SMU. Funny I'm mentioning all these Texas schools, but there's a lot of schools out there with a lot of money. that did not do what Indiana did. And I don't know if, did all of a sudden when Kurt Cignetti come in, the money started flowing in? I'm sure it was better than it had been, and probably part of the agreement for him to come in, he asked about, you know, the financial resources. But I suspect, as much as anything, more money came in because of some of the success that he had in his first year.
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, I don't know the numbers, so I'm not, and I'm not going to pretend to, but I think that first year there's some, I think he probably got more money and more resources than Tom Allen did. But I don't know that it was exponentially higher. And so that makes, because like, and Kurt Cignetti has his own way. He's not a guy that's going to go out and recruit a bunch of 4- and 5-star guys just because that's what you think is going to win. He's going to get guys that he know can produce at a high level. And so I think what happened was he was probably given a solid budget for his first year. And there were a lot of people that were like, now we've seen this with Indiana. We've seen this with Kevin Wilson and Tom Allen and guys who, you know, it looks like from the outside, like they could be successful. But when you get down to brass tacks, they just weren't able to have high levels of success. They were good for Indiana standards. Like Kevin Wilson had that team at 500. Tom Allen took them to a couple bowl games, but there was just no sustained success really. And so after that first year, when they go 11-1 in the regular season, reach the college football playoff, that's when Mark Cuban starts to get involved, right? That's when some of the other donors are like, hey, we might have a real team here. And I don't know what the conversations were like, but I'm guessing Kurt Cignetti says, look, we got a lot of these guys coming back. We are a few pieces away from legitimately competing for a national championship. And so I think that it is the, you know, the not the trick. It's kind of like a snowball though, right? Like you just, the success, once you have that success, it starts to bring in more and more dollars. The more and more success you have, the more money you're going to bring in. And I think that's what's happened. And you look at Indiana's transfer portal hall again this year, and it probably isn't cheap, right? So I agree with you. I think that Kurt, the reason it was so impressive is because he started out probably with a, probably I would guess, middle of the road Big Ten budget, probably higher than most people would think, but lower than still Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, some of those other Nebraska, probably some of those other programs. So, I think that's why it was so impressive from the jump, is that he did it with a limited budget,
and he didn't have the, you know, the Texas Tech jump, which was, if you saw their transfer portal, they bought a team in many ways. Indiana brought in guys that they liked who were still mostly 3-star guys. They weren't the obvious high-end players that you saw some other schools bring in.
Well, if you looked at that, I don't know what their transfer portal class was ranked, but my guess is there was a lot of criticism. Like, you're going to bring James Madison guys into the Big Ten? And you're going to bring in a quarterback from Ohio into the Big Ten? I think a lot of people thought if they get to – I know I thought, hey, you get to 4 wins, that's a good first season for Kurt Cignetti. We tripled that with a bunch of Group of Five players. So that's why I agree with you in terms of – there's probably guys out there that have had similar success in terms of, like, their record. Probably not as much as Cignetti in Indiana, but just in terms of where the program was at, who we brought into the program – I agree. I think that it's going to be hard pressed to find a better 2-year start to a tenure than what he's had.
And there's also, I've referred to this often on the show, the blue chip ratio theory.
Yep.
And I can't remember the name of the writer who brought it out, but it was essentially you had to have over 50% blue chip players on your roster to win a national championship. Blue chip meaning 4- or 5-star players. And the top teams, it's not like, oh, just over 50%. They often have 80-90% blue chip players, which means, you know, on a 85-man scholarship roster, that's maybe 55 blue chip players. Indiana, I believe, had eight, Dustin, on their national championship team. I think coaching was a factor in that.
I would say that has a lot to do with it. Yes, I think that's what was most impressive, is you have just a guy who developed and maybe found the diamonds in the rough. I mean, we see it, and I don't always like to do. Why not? I bring in my Purdue basketball recruiting, but there's a lot of guys that they've found on the basketball court who have been three-star guys that are in the late 100s to or high 100s, low 200s, and then turn them into all Big Ten players. If you're able to find that level of caliber player where you say, yeah, this guy may not be a four-star, but he's got the potential to be, you know, a all-conference player. You have to have an eye. So I think part of it is he probably has a better eye for talent than most. And then obviously the way he's been able to develop a lot of those players has been impressive too.
It always makes me curious, those coaches who are able to do that, what are they looking for differently in these players? You know, what are what's the skill set? What is kind of the analogy to Moneyball and baseball? Yep. What are the what are the undervalued traits? So one last item before we get into these schools on the list, or the coaches on the list, is, and I heard someone talk about this and it makes perfect sense, but I hadn't thought about it. And he was talking, this someone who was kind of an insider, he was talking about the talent at Ohio State, for example, which has always been top five recruiting, maybe the best roster in college football. But one of the things that's changing in their recruiting is they are getting the top tier guys. They're still getting those five stars, the top four star guys, and they're paying the price for them. But what they're not getting is that next tier, because they're using up so much money on these top 100 players that that next tier, well, their choice is to be second or third. You know, it, hey, if you were the second or third receiver on Ohio State, that's a great place to be.
Yeah.
But when there's money involved and you will be the number one money guy at West Virginia or Pitt, say, two regional places, hey, these players are now going to that second level school because they're being treated like the star there, which also means more money.
Right. And I think that that's why when you opened up NIL and when you opened up the college football playoff to expand past four teams, which, oh my God, I can't wait to talk about the idea of a 2014 playoff. Ridiculous. But anyway, that's a topic for a different day, Jim. A lot of people thought that that is those were the reasons why you would see more parity in college football because A, so I think even if they had kept the playoff at four teams, I even think NIL would have still benefited those premier teams, the Alabamas, the Ohio States, Clemson, Georgia. You could throw in there, Georgia, Notre Dame would still benefit those teams because, yeah, maybe you can make more money at a place like a Pitt or a West Virginia, but you're not going to be able to compete for a national championship. Is an extra $50,000, I'm just throwing a number out there, is an extra $50,000 worth it? Or do you want to work your way up, compete for a national championship, and then maybe make that money when you're a junior or senior, when you are the number one receiver at one of those other schools? So I think the fact that, you know, you can get to the playoff, you can win a championship, you can win a conference championship, you can win a national championship, and you can be the highest paid guy. Now you see the a disbursement of talent. Obviously, as you said, Ohio State, Alabama, those other schools are still going to bring in a lot of those four and five star blue chip guys. But you'll see more of those people go other places because other places would say, well, we can pay this guy a little bit more. We can pay that guy a little bit more to come to our school. And you know, because maybe they think we're just one piece away. We're one wide receiver away. We're one offensive tackle away. We're a running back away. And that's just, I think that's how you get to this. What's the word I'm looking for here? More parity in college football.
Do you, Dustin, take $100,000 from Ohio State and a chance at a national championship, or $400,000 to go to West Virginia?
Yeah, I'm taking $400,000.
Yes.
1,000%.
And I think, and I don't know, you know, I pull those numbers out of the air. If it were, you know, 300,000 versus 100, I think I'd still take the 300,000. How about 200,000 versus 100? I think I'd still take the 200,000 versus 100. But that is what is happening because Ohio State is spending $1 million on the other guy.
Right. Well, and I think the other part of it too is like, I think one of the reasons why some of these places are still going to get, at least in their current state, are still going to continue to get those players at a high level is because Ohio State's proven, especially at certain positions, you can get to the NFL. Like Penn State, if you're a tight end, I know it's not James Franklin anymore, but there's a history there of getting into the NFL. So maybe you say, you know what, maybe I'm going to make $100,000 less my first year or two, but then I'll be up, I'll bump up, I'll be a starter, I'll make a little bit more money, and then guess what? I'm going to make millions of dollars in the NFL as a starting tight end for a team in the league.
You're exactly right, and I think that's the story with the elite players are still getting elite money at Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia, those schools. The difference is the next level guy, when money wasn't involved, you went to those big schools because you could work your way up, still get an opportunity for the NFL. You had the better facilities and the connections and everything that came with going to those schools. But now, because of money, you could, there's actually a reason to go to West Virginia versus going to Ohio State if West Virginia offers you more money. They never had that advantage before. Now, they're not going to get the top guy, the number one guy, but they might get the number two guy or the number three guy. And that's why we've had more parity these last couple of years. All right, Dustin, we've gotten through all those parameters and all that. When we come back, we'll actually look at the list and get your take. Stay tuned.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike B and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim. He's Dustin. It's quarter number three of our show. We're talking about college football coaches and how you might rank them. I found the ranking that came out online. Let me give you, Dustin, the top 10, and we'll start talking about some specific schools. Number one, Georgia, Kirby Smart. Kurt Cignetti from Indiana. Third is Ryan Day, Ohio State. Dan Lanning, Oregon. Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame. Kalen DeBoer, Alabama. Dabo Sweeney from Clemson is number seven. Lane Kiffin, LSU. Number eight, Kyle Whittingham, despite the fact that this guy has him listed as the Utah coach, now the Michigan coach, and Mario Cristobal from Miami is at number 10. First of all, did he get it right with Kirby Smart, number one?
See, this is where I think yes. I do think yes, because, again, if you want to throw in, I want to see a guy who's done it. He's won multiple championships. He's been successful over a long period of time. And so I think that I don't have any gripes with that. But do you want me to jump into my lone gripe then?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Why not?
So I want to hear you gripe.
Okay, good, because it's happening. To me, and this is such a mediocre gripe, but to me, if you have Kirby Smart at number one, I think you'd have to put Ryan Day at two. He and Kurt Cignetti have the same number of national championships. I understand that Kurt Cignetti did it at a place like Indiana where they were awful, and Ryan Day got into a job at Ohio State where it's really hard to win fewer than nine games. But that's still a big time job for a first year head coach. So because Ryan Day has done it longer and been successful and continually been in the playoff and won Big Ten championships and won a national championship, I think I would have Ryan Day at two and Kurt Cignetti three. But that is, if you would rather say that Kurt Cignetti's had a better 2 year run than Ryan, you got no problem with it. So I just would switch that too, because I feel like you're mixing up the criteria there a little bit, but that's really just splitting hairs. I I don't have a huge issue with Cignetti over Ryan Day. I just feel like if you're going to put you either put Cignetti at number one or number three. How's that?
You know, if you're going to wind Dustin, make it legitimate. Come on.
All right. I need to go to the Target and buy a soapbox.
here's why I'm okay with it the way they did it. And in fact, I'm probably going to contradict myself a little bit. I called what Kurt Cignetti did in these last 2 years the greatest 2 years of coaching ever in college football. And I might say that he might be the best coach, but you have to look at track record a bit. What Kirby Smart did at Georgia, besides, do you know over this 10-year period, he's averaged 11.7 wins per year. That's like rounded up to 12, okay?
Yeah.
Two national championships, and after his first year there, he's only lost three games once. So there's been that consistent high level. Where I put him ahead of Ryan Day, just comparing those two, a similar time period, yes, there's the two national championships to one, but Ohio State had already set this precedent of winning national championships, being at that very elite. Georgia was a step down from there. Remember Mark Richt? And the question is, gee, why are you firing this guy when he wins nine games a year? Georgia said, we want to win more than that. Guess what? Kirby Smart did that. He elevated the program. Now, talking elevation of program, what Kurt Cignetti did at Indiana is just, in my mind, a total miracle. And it's just that longevity that I give a little bit of an edge. Ryan Day, I'm not giving him the edge over Kurt Cignetti because, as you pointed out, each has one national championship. Cignetti did it over a two-year span, sure, not over the 10-year span that or whatever it was for Ryan Day. And Ryan Day had so much more talent and facilities and everything else to work with. Mm-hmm. Now, I give him credit for keeping that train running and keeping it going and finally winning his national championship. So I'm okay with him third. Boy, I just can't put him ahead of Kurt Cignetti, though.
I think that that's fair. Like I said, to me, it's splitting hairs. To me, I understand your point about Georgia, but it wasn't like Georgia, the cupboard was bare. Like, they still had a lot of talent. They still had good recruiting classes. So that's why, to me, you either have to put Cignetti one or three. I think you have to clump Kirby Smart and Ryan Day together. That's legitimately, I would have, if this list said Kurt Cignetti number one, and then Kirby, and then Ryan Day, I'd be fine with it. Or if this said Kirby Smart, Ryan Day, Kurt Cignetti, I'd be fine with it. It just, to me, it's a split in the criteria. That's the only problem I have with it. So,
you're saying if you're going to give points for longevity, be consistent about it.
Yes, correct. But you know what's funny, Jim, is you are exactly right. Like, Mark Richt was a good coach. There's 95% of schools would take a Mark Richt. Georgia said, no, we want to win a national championship. Indiana was basically like, can we get somebody in here who can get us eight wins for the love of God? Then they go win a national championship 2 years later.
All right. Let's look at some of the others. I like Kalen DeBoer as a coach. But he went into Alabama, which seemed like a machine running the way it's been. He's only been 20-8 at Alabama. I mean, he's literally probably in trouble for his job.
Yeah, look, Washington Kalen DeBoer would be probably top five.
Yes. But
he left. I think that this is just a square peg in a round hole situation, similar to Joe Moorhead, but with more talent. I think Kalen DeBoer is a really good coach. I think when he – I don't want to say this. This sounds mean, Jim. But I think when he gets fired and he gets a job somewhere else, he's going to be really successful at that new location. I just don't think Alabama is a good fit for him.
I suspect you might be right. Kalen DeBoer was 25-3 in 2 years at Washington. Just incredible. I think that deserves – now, the Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman, I get it feels like you like the shiny newer object, you know, where they are right now. Dabo Swinney, he's down at number 7. Okay, realize they're still putting him up top 10. But again, if you go in history, this is a guy who has 2 national championships,
right?
And perhaps even more impressive, 6 straight years, 6 straight, Dustin, with a top 4 team. 6 years in a row. And this wasn't Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State. He took a Clemson program and elevated them to that level. I get like this last year wasn't the best year, and he's adjusting to NIL and how things are. But I think that deserves a little more recognition than, you know, where Dan Lanning and Marcus Freeman and even Kalen DeBoer are.
Yeah, like to me, and this is where I think more of that inconsistency comes in, like Dan Lanning has done some really good things, won the Big Ten, but when it comes to the playoff, they've been one and done. They've been miserable. Obviously, note, I have a little bit more give on Marcus Freeman because they did make it to the national championship game, but he's another one that's a Kurt Cignetti type where it's so early in his tenure. And he's had some bad losses, Jim. They lost.
Some awful losses.
They lost to Marshall a few years ago. They lost to Northern Illinois. Obviously that Northern Illinois loss didn't mean much because they were able to get to the national championship game. But yeah, I think I would probably, if you're looking at full resume. Now, if you're looking at guys going into like 2026, probably appropriately ranked. But if you're looking at holistic resume, I would put the guy who's won 2 national championships probably at number 4.
Well, I think
you can make the argument number 3. I wouldn't, but you could make that argument.
Yes, you could. And I can see putting Notre Dame in the top 5.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because for this coming year. But that doesn't mean Marcus Freeman deserves to be there. He has to carry with him what he's done in the past. And I'm going to bring up something else. You mentioned making the national championship game, okay? And I understand close doesn't count. I get it. I really do. Penn State played Notre Dame. That game went down to the wire last minute. So the guy who won that game, that tight, tight game, he's number 5. And the guy who lost that game by that much is number 17.
Yep.
And that, of course, is James Franklin. Now, before people get all worked up, James Franklin deserved to be fired. He needed to be fired, okay? But I'm going to argue for his coaching resume, he came into a Penn State team that was smack in the middle of sanctions, Dustin.
Yeah.
I think you had to be here to realize how decimated this program was. People give a lot of credit to Bill O'Brien, but he hadn't yet felt the effects of sanctions yet. Mm-hmm. It came into full effect when James Franklin got there. He kept the team, you know, head above water at 7-6 the first 2 years, and then won a Big Ten championship.
Yep. To me, you're weighing a lot of what happened last season. And to me, that's kind of obviously that was under his watch. So he's going to take responsibility. I don't know if he's going to, but we will place responsibility on him.
Yes.
That team checked out. I think it's easy. Like that team.
He lost the team. Out.
Yes. Yeah, correct. There's no other way. But if you look at this whole, like, you could make an argument James Franklin belongs in the top 10. And yes. I know that that sounds crazy because of his record against top 10 teams, but maybe top 10 is a little generous. I would hear an argument for it. But the interesting one is, well, I'm going to spill the beans here. Matt Campbell's at 11, James Franklin's at 17. I don't know about that, Jim. I think they should be a little bit closer.
I do too. And in fact, I agree with your initial assessment that James Franklin, based on what he's accomplished, probably deserves a top 10, definitely more so than Matt Campbell does. I would argue more so than Mario Cristobal, more than Kyle Whittingham, more than Lane Kiffin, maybe more than Kalen DeBoer. That's coming from someone who thinks they made the right decision in firing him. Okay.
Right.
So, well, I'll tell you what, I'll make my final point when we get back, Dustin, right after this break.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Dustin. I'm Jim. We're talking about the top coaches in college football and rankings for them. Real quick, I'll do the top 10 again. Kirby Smart, Kurt Cignetti, Ryan Day, Dan Lanning, Marcus Freeman, Kalen DeBoer, Dabo Sweeney, Lane Kiffin, Kyle Whittingham, and Mario Cristobal. One of the things, I think the top three of Kirby Smart, Kurt Cignetti, and Ryan Day are obvious top three. You know, I no argument with it. After that, though, Dustin, not a lot of guys really stick out. And as an understanding of how vague these kind of rankings are, Bill Belichick may be called the greatest NFL coach of all time.
Yeah.
He's not going to sniff this top 20 list.
No. No. I mean, you know, we can't rank these coaches based on 28-year-old girlfriends, Jim.
28. I thought she was more like 24, but whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, I think you're like correct.
By 28 years old, he'll move on to a new 24-year-old.
There you go.
So I was making the argument about James Franklin being in the top 10, and it does bring up that argument about recency bias. How much does the last year matter? And I think it mattered a lot to the person making these rankings, as you saw with Marcus Freeman. Notre Dame is supposed to have a very good team this year, highly regarded. I think that biases someone versus James Franklin, who I think has accomplished more than Marcus Freeman has.
Yeah, I would say so. Over the course of it, I mean, he's won a conference championship. Has Marcus Freeman done that?
There you go.
that's how we rank that. No, I agree with that. I mean, I think, again, it's kind of the Ryan Day situation for Marcus Freeman, and that's really hard to grade, right? Where he, as much as people hated Brian Kelly, he was a really good coach at Notre Dame. And he inherited a program that's really good. He understood that how to recruit. He was kind of the perfect fit. It was very similar to how the transition to Ryan Day went. So how do you properly grade that? I do think that Marcus Freeman is a great coach, but I think if you, again, I don't know where you could properly place James Franklin. I just think when you look at some of these names, especially Kyle Whittingham, like what is Kyle Whittingham doing up there above James Franklin? And I think Kyle Whittingham's a great coach, but yeah. he was, I mean, those two. Let me say this. If you want to put him ahead of James Franklin, fine. I get it. But it's not eight spots. It's one, maybe two. Right?
I think Kyle Whittingham is being given the benefit of the doubt for what he's going to do at Michigan, probably the better program. All right. Let me give you a couple other just random thoughts, see what you think. Clark Lee from Vanderbilt is at number 13. Do you know what his overall record at Vanderbilt is?
It's got to be close to 500.
No, it isn't. 26-36. Last
wow.
couple of years, he was 7-6 and 10-3. Very good for Vanderbilt. But y'all want to know who else was back-to-back nine-win seasons at Vanderbilt? The guy we were just talking about. So I think that's a little bit – and he had a – we're going to find out now without the quarterback – who led them the last couple of years, how will they perform? So there's that, Mike, the question there. Here's another question for you. How about Lincoln Riley? He was 55-10 at Oklahoma with four top 10 teams. I know it hasn't been the same at USC, but think he might have deserved some consideration for top 20?
Man, that's such a tough question. Oklahoma Lincoln Riley is top five. USC Lincoln Riley is 60. Right? So, yeah, I mean, if you, again, you want to look at the overall longevity and the success, I think he could probably, you could make a case for him, especially with some of these other guys on the list. Because his highest height, like, and again, this is, how do you determine like where they were at their peak, where they're going into now? Because you would make the case, like, Lincoln Riley is accomplished. How do I say this? He's been to the playoff more than Kirk Ferentz, than Brett Bielema. Those guys are on this list. Than Jeff Munkin. Now, I think Jeff Munkin's a unique case. I think he deserves his credit because coaching at Army, Navy, Air Force is a really difficult task. Lincoln Riley's an interesting one because if you just asked me, is Lincoln Riley a top 20 college football coach right now? I'd say no. But among his peers over the course of the last 10 years, probably.
And, you know, you mentioned Jeff Munkin at Army, and I know that's a special place, but over his last 5 years, there's only been one season where he's won more than 7 games.
Yeah.
So is, you know, but I think he won 12 games 2 years ago. Recent enough, I think that's recency bias going on there. I'm going to ask you this question. I brought up Lincoln Riley. How about in your head, is there anyone you could think of not on this list who should be on the list? And if
so,
go ahead.
Oh, no, I'll let you finish your conversation because there's one, maybe two guys that I'm thinking of off the top of my head.
You want to put them? I was going to throw out a couple other names to stall to give you time to think. But if you got a couple names, I want to hear them.
Okay, so I have two. And the second one, probably not, but I think it's at least worth mentioning. Number one is Steve Sarkisian. I know that he had an average run at Washington. His time ended prematurely at USC. He's won 10 games each of his last 3 years at Texas and got him into the playoff 2024 before they lost to Ohio State. So to me, like, again, if you're penalizing Lincoln Riley for his failure at USC, why are you not rewarding Steve Sarkisian for his success at Texas, right? I think that makes perfect sense. The other one, Jim, and I don't think this actually, but like Kenny Dillingham at Arizona State. Now, that's basically a one-year wonder. They went 11-3 in his first full, I think that was his first full season. Maybe it was his second. I can't remember if he was an interim coach in 23 or not, but 24, he had an outstanding year. Last year, they took a major step. They were 8-5. I don't know. You probably want a little bit more from him there, but those were the two names that kind of popped up. I don't know. And the third guy would maybe be the I'm not going to remember his name. Texas Tech, though.
I have him listed. Let me find him. Joey McGuire.
Okay. I was going to say Sonny McGuire. I don't know why, but anyway, yeah, those would probably be the three that I'm thinking of. And you may bring up somebody else that's just off the top of my head. Can't think of
in my list of names to talk about. I also had Sarkisian, which I looked at his whole track record and said, two top five finishes at Texas. Maybe he deserves it. I had Joey McGuire listed. Here's a couple for you. How about Rhett Lashley, the coach at SMU?
That's a good one. Yep.
And again, this is got some money got pumped into the system, but he got them into the ACC.
At SMU, are you sure?
Oh, yeah. Very confident of that. How about Jed Fish?
Oh, Arizona, yeah, that.
And then at Washington.
Yes, that's a good one. I can't believe I forgot that one. Yeah, that I would put Jed Fish in that conversation.
And, you know, I think this is where guys doing it at the non-powerhouse schools.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia and Oregon and Notre Dame, LSU, well represented at the very top. I kind of like the guys who've done it in different places. Now, here's a name also I'm going to throw out there, kind of because he's following the Kurt Cignetti path. Kurt Cignetti, obviously the 2 years at Indiana, but, and I know they're smaller schools, but yeah, he won as a head coach everywhere he went. Okay. Bob Chesney, now he's going to UCLA, which might be unfortunate for his coaching record, but his record at his four prior stops, first one, 23-9, 44-16, 44-21, most recently at James Madison after Kurt Cignetti stripped them bare,
yeah,
21-6 over 2 years. The guy has won everywhere he's been. If he wins at UCLA, man, you just could fire him up. But to me, we will never know how he would compare to, say, a Ryan Day,
right,
whose first head coaching job was at Ohio State.
That's the difficult thing. Like, how do you kind of evaluate these guys based on their location, based on the resources they have, the money that's pumped in, that sort of thing. So, yeah, I mean, Bob Chesney's a really good he's a really good pick there. And I think, it is just really hard to evaluate, you know, what you've accomplished at a mid-major program versus, you know, just inheriting a fantastic Ohio State level program. Here's another one I'm going to throw out, and I can't believe I missed this one. Jeff Brohm. Now, I know, yeah, he hasn't been fantastic, but I would put him above Brett Bielema and Kirk Ferentz, because to me, again, are you including Brett Bielema's time at Wisconsin? Because that was fantastic. But Jeff Brohm went 30-10 at Western Kentucky, 36-34 at Purdue, which is not great. That's a 500 record, but he got him into
Purdue.
It's Purdue, and he got him into the Big Ten championship game his last year. And then at Louisville, 10-4, 9-4, 9-4, 28-12. They finished in the top 25 once, 2-1 in bowl games. I mean, I know it's not great, but again, why are you putting Brett Bielema, Kirk Ferentz, Jeff Munkin above Jeff Brohm?
And some of these, that's a great point. And I think some of these names, and we're almost out of time, but I wanted to bring up Kalani Sitake at BYU. Mm-hmm. Who's very highly ranked here. Do you know he's not had a top 10 team yet?
I did not know that.
So, but I think the fact that he was offered the Penn State job, just like mm-hmm. Whittingham got the Michigan job. Matt Campbell, I think, is at 11 because he got the Penn State job as part of it. They all got a bump because of this offseason. Dustin, that went way too fast. A lot of fun. Thank you. Thank you all for joining us. Make sure you come back next time for the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Welcome to the new HVU Insider, Penn State football's fan scouting platform providing exclusive recruiting intel, the first of its kind platform giving Penn State fans an inside look at how the Nittany Lions identify, evaluate, and recruit the next generation of talent, led by Mike V and powered by Penn State students. It's a new era of Penn State football under Coach Matt Campbell. You can sign up at happyvalleyunited.com. It's fast and free.